cars. What do all these songs have in common? Okay, if you are thinking this is a KTEL Golden Oldies collection, it is not. I'll pause here for a moment while our young friends Google this. That's K-T-E-L. Anyway, all the songs we just heard were recorded or became hits in 1971. It's the year music journalist David Hepworth insists is the best year in rock and roll history. He makes this case in the new book, Never a Dull Moment. After I read it, I had to ask him, what's the big deal about 1971?
We go back and look at the records from that year, and I have to confess, it's rather special to me because I was 21 in 1971, so I remember it very clearly. Mm-hmm. It's the year of Elton John's Madma Across the Water, Joni Mitchell's Blue, Marvin Gaye's What's Going On, Sly and the Family Stones' There's a Riot Going On, and so on and so on and so on. Loads of records that we still listen to today. And, you know, so my children in their 20s are aware of those records. I've just been killing time in a coffee shop round the corner where, you know, playing in the background was Al Green's hit from 1971. This music lives in the present in a way that lots of old music doesn't, and that's my point.
Specifically from 1971.
Well, yes, because there was a huge explosion of creativity in a very short period of time. And a huge number of people were between the ages of 25 and 30, which is scientifically proven to be the most creative period for musicians. And so they did their best work during that period. And they did it very, very quickly. They did it with no second guessing.
Yeah, there's a point in a book you write about this idea that record companies had that there shouldn't be a delay. You know, once you've made one, make another one. Don't hesitate. Don't, like, edit yourself. Just make some more. Like, you 26-year-old dynamo you, just go for it.
They had no reason to believe that these people were going to continue to be popular longer than a few years. Mm-hmm. You know, so they were on contracts that meant that they were doing two albums a year. In the most extreme case, David Bowie, 1971, he releases Man Who Sold the World. We passed up on the stairs. Records and releases Hunky Dory. And then records all but one track of Ziggy Stardust from the Spiders from Mars in the year 1971. They were just racing, you know, to take advantage of the opportunity that they suddenly got. And they didn't waste an enormous amount of time like they have done since in polishing the thing afterwards. They were working on the principle that first thought is your best thought. And then they were their best thoughts. Ziggy played for time, jiving us that
we were voodoo. The kids were just crass. Just on your David Bowie premise alone, I'm feeling more convinced that 1971 was a good year. But there were just, I mean, you listed some of them. There were so many major albums that did come out that year, and I just want to run through a couple of them and just get your thoughts on them. I mean, one that kind of took me by surprise that I hadn't thought about in a while is Carole King's Tapestry. I feel the earth. You say this album took off for many reasons, but one of them because she sang the way we all thought we could sing.
Well, it's a quote from one of our fellow singers who said, she has the voice that every woman likes to think she has. And I think it's a fair point, you know, that it's not like a performer's voice. It's a very personal voice. It's like an interior voice. You know, prior to that, really, she'd only done demos for professional singers to do professional versions of. And so what Lou Adler, her producer, wanted to do was to make a record that felt like a demo, that had that kind of integrity of a pencil sketch about it, which is one of the beautiful things about it. Tumbling down, tumbling down. Hey, hey, mama said the way you move gonna make you sweat, gonna make you groove.
An album that I don't think many people would argue is one of the great albums of all time, Led Zeppelin IV, comes out in late 1971. And you talk about, in an interesting way, one of the reasons the band was so great was that they ignored the press and they didn't have traditional album covers. And because of that, they were able to kind of create their own mythology. I mean, it's something that you say would be impossible to do now.
Well, I think one of the points I make in the book is that social media has made it impossible for bands nowadays to have the mystique that Led Zeppelin had in 1971. Oh, yeah. Because you never saw them on the television. You hardly ever saw a photograph of them. You have very little idea what they looked like or where they stood on stage or how they behaved. You couldn't go to YouTube and look up loads of clips of them, you know. So Led Zeppelin very cunningly exploited this mystique. And, of course, the classic case is the packaging of Led Zeppelin 4, which doesn't have the name of the band.
Right.
Doesn't have the name of the album.
Right.
Doesn't have the name of the record company, I think I'm right saying. It's got a guy on the cover with a load of sticks on his back, you know. And it didn't matter at all. You know, this record didn't quite get to number one in the United States and went to number two, I think, but stayed on the charts for years and years and years.
Do you think 1971 is the best year because it was a great year for you? It was a formative year for you. I mean, like you said, you were 21. It was the first year you were a music journalist. Of course that's going to feel like a huge year. There's other years, right? 1969 was also a major year in music.
There's loads of very good years. And there's books being written about other years. There's a very good book about 1966. You know, there's books about 1957. And they're all perfectly admissible subjective accounts. But it stands to reason that one of us must be objectively correct. And I think that's me. And I think you only have to go into your local coffee shop and the evidence of how correct I am will be available to you. And can I just say, in terms of the fact that I was 21 at the time, I don't feel nostalgic for any other aspect of 1971. Not at all.
Oh, really?
I don't want to sit there and watch an evening's TV from 1971, thank you very much. It's a nightmare. But the music of 1971, you know, lives in the present.
David Hepworth, thank you so much for your time today.
Pleasure.
That's David Hepworth. His new book about the music of 1971 is called Never a Dull Moment, and it's out now. Every time I hear Bob O'Reilly now by The Who, I'm going to be like, all right, 1971, there you go.
And the point about it is you will hear it.
Yes.
And nobody's playing it because it's 1971. They're playing it because it's brilliant.